In this episode, I am in conversation with Ahaina. She's an apprentice jeweler from Brazil. She migrated over to New Zealand and made her life here. It goes to show how different everyone's goals are. From hearing her story, you may want to start a business. You may want to excel in your career. Well, some people, for Ahaina, it was to learn English and make a brand new home. Her story is super inspiring about how she kept her belief and her faith that New Zealand was going to become her home. And now it is. It's a testament to her manifestation, and it puts truth to the fact that if you believe you will do something no matter what, then you're going to do it. It's something that I really needed to hear, especially with all of the decisions that I'm going to need to make in the future. I think her story is super inspiring, and that's why I wanted to share it with you. Welcome to Misadventurous with me, Tiffany Rouge, a colour lover who's filling out the grey area that we call life to help you live a more colourful life and help you unlock your mind so that you can be adventurous too. How much of your own jewellery do you wear?
I wear it quite often, but sometimes I just, I don't know. You know when you do something and you don't think that, nah, I'll save that. I want to wear something else today. So I don't wear it as often because I never think that is perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, is a perfect jewelry, like a perfect done jewelry. So I always procrastinate on wearing my own jewelry because I think there's more work to be done with it.
Is that in a way that, like, because you think it's so nice and so precious that you need to have, like, a nice day to wear it, or it's still, like, it's unfinished?
I think because I know, like, how finished pieces are and fine jewellery looks like, then I expect it to look better than what it looks now. But I've got better because when my first pieces came out, most people were like, oh, that's so cool, that's so cool. And I'm like, it looks so unfinished. But then I was like, you know what? It's going to have an unfinished look at it, and that's going to be it.
Sometimes I get this way, like the more I look at something and the more I play with it, it almost, like, you're right, like it'll never be done. And when someone else listens to it, because they have like no perspective of how you made it, how much time it took, the process, they just look at it for what it is. Like they take it on face value and they go, that's great, what are you talking about? You didn't need to do anything more to it.
Exactly. They didn't know that you like the process to get it done. So they're like, oh, it looks done for me now. And I'm like, no, there's so much more to be done.
Do you ever listen to people when they say that, or do you go back and actually finish it in your own mind?
Sometimes I do, and some, like, I've got a lot better on taking it as it is. Like, I'm not a machine manufacturing jewelry. I'm not gonna make two pieces exactly alike. I don't have machines. I do it on my own. So there's like, I don't do many. I don't do large productions. So each piece is unique. And if it has an unfinished look at it, it's fine because it's its own, and then the other one will look better, and then the other one will look a little bit different but better as well.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite thing to make?
Bracelets. I don't make many of them because they're really complicated to make by hand, but I love wearing them. They're my favorite thing to wear, and I enjoy making them because I picture myself wearing it and what is going to go with it. And just play around. They're easy to play around with.
It's like a matter of taste, right, in terms of what you make. How do you make it? Can you talk about the process of, like, yeah, say you're going to go make a bracelet from start to finish, where would you start?
Well, if you're starting from scratch, you will need to have a lot of equipment. So you're going to need to buy the metals and melt it down and shape it on in a mold. If you're going to have a bangle, you're going to have shaped in a wire. And if you're going to have something different, you just cut it and melt it and shape the way you want. Then you're going to cut it, like, let it cool. You're going to cut it. You're going to shape it.
How do you shape it? Like, do you do it with your hands?
Let's say if you're doing a bangle, you're going to heat it up. Mm-hmm. Like, once the shape of the bangle, like, the wire is done, the thickness and the, like, how you want. Mm. Then you're going to cut the size that you want. Like you cut with pliers. Then you're going to heat it up and you're going to get something to, say, a bangle. You're going to roll it around and with a sort of a hammock, but not really a hammock. Very softly, you're going to shape it in a circle.
Shape it how? Like hit it with the hammer?
Yeah. Yeah. So you put it around something hard and like some metal in the cylindric form. And you're going to slowly shape in it. And when it's done, the size that you want and everything, you're going to heat it up again. put some sort of chemicals under it and a piece of the metal in flux, and you're going to heat that up, and it's crazy how it automatically fills the gap.
So when you're talking about, like, you're hitting it, are you holding it standalone? Like,
I'm holding a torch.
Okay, so you're holding a torch. I'm just trying to get, like, a picture mm-hmm. for it in my mind. So you've got this wire, right, mm-hmm. and it's, what, straight?
Yeah, as soon as you make it, if you buy just the wire, it's going to be straight.
Okay.
Initially.
And are you holding it with your hands? You say you've got the torch in one hand. Mm-hmm. What's the other hand doing?
Tweezers. Sort of, because it's going to heat up. But if not, you can just do it with your own hands. That's fine. But once it's heat, you're just going to hold the tweezers and the torch, and you're going to heat. And once you see the color has changed, that's the good point. You don't want to heat it too much. Otherwise, it's going to change the whole material color, and it's going to have stains. And yeah, it's really crazy.
Wow, I didn't know that. Like, you could heat metal to a point where it would stain and, like, I guess ruin it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So you can fix it after done, but it's so much more work that you don't want to do it. So mm-hmm. you have to be really careful, heat up slowly. It's a lot, like, doing jewelry manually is a long process. It's mm-hmm. time consuming. So that's the thing about it.
Would you say it's an art form?
I do think it is. I don't know, like, I enjoy doing it, and sometimes it comes up something that I had no idea something that I would wear would have that shape and form, but someone just absolutely loves it and identifies themselves with it and just wants it. So I think it's really cool. I think it's a really nice way to put your creativity on something.
Have you always been creative?
Yes. Yeah. Some people like numbers. I just use my creativity all the time.
Mm-hmm. Before you were making jewelry, how did you express yourself creatively?
I've done a few semesters of publicity and marketing at uni. So I'm always like, I like video and photographs. Absolutely love photos.
Like taking photos and like Photoshop?
Taking photos, photo shoots, natural photos. I really enjoy that part.
Mm-hmm.
Then I've got here and I've got involved in a lot of stuff. So I left my creative side aside for a bit. I didn't work with it for a while and I really missed it. So when I started this job and I saw that I could put my creative side working on something again, it was really great. It just felt like it was natural.
Mm.
It was really good.
Does it feel like work for you?
Sometimes, because it's not just creating all the time. So sometimes, like every other job, you're not going to do just what you like. But it's fine, because I know that even the downsides, even the times that I'm not doing what I love to do and spend every minute in, I know that it's all in the same context. So it's fine.
Yeah, cool. Because you're not from New Zealand, are you?
No, I'm from Brazil.
How long have you lived in New Zealand?
For about 4 years now.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Did you know much English before you came to New Zealand?
No English at all.
You're so well spoken. Like, and to think in 4 years from knowing very little, like zero to very little English, to now coming on a podcast and being able to think in a different language is insane.
I mean, I'm just here on my courage. I have no idea how this is going to sound in the end.
Well, I think you sound really good. It's a testament to sort of see how far you've come. You know, do you ever look back and go, actually, when I arrived in New Zealand, I didn't know a word of English and here I am.
Yeah. Yeah, nah, sometimes I feel ashamed of like the people that I've known, and they try to talk to me and I try to be friends with people, and I was like, oh my god, those people must be either bored with like hanging out with someone that does not speak their language and does not understand what's going on, or it must be really painful to them to like spend a while with me and I'm just there sitting trying to say a word, not saying it, couldn't understand, just standing there. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh no, that's so embarrassing. It's cringy to think about it.
Do you ever think that sometimes like the opposite, like when you're in Brazil and there's other people that are English speakers, that they maybe think the same thing?
I don't know. It's a cultural thing too. Like here, people are very, very friendly, and it was more in my mind than for them. Some of those people I've met again, like now a few years later, and they're like, nah, you're fine. You're good. Don't worry about it. We're used to that because New Zealand has so many people coming from everywhere around the world all the time. And in Brazil, it's the same. Like people are friendly, really friendly. If you speak English, they're just going to treat you really well, because like for us, such a joy for someone from somewhere really far come to Brazil where we speak Portuguese and a lot goes on, and they had between all the places in the world, they decided to go there. So yeah, it works fine both ways.
Would you say that you're a confident English speaker?
Now, yeah. I know that I'm far from being like fluent speaking, and I have a lot of little faults that I pick up later after I've said it. And I think that now I can manage myself on speaking in anywhere, I would say. Like, if I need to do anything, I don't need anyone to translate anything for me. I can figure it out myself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the point that I get there. Nah, I'm all good by myself on my English. Yeah,
I feel like that would take a lot as well to be able to speak in a different language and to confidently be like, no, I'm good. I got this.
Yeah, it's a really good feeling when you're like, oh, I actually don't need anyone to help me out with this.
How did you get there? What was the process of learning English for you? Did you learn it in school? Did you have to take certain lessons outside of school or outside of whatever?
In Brazil, we do learn English in school, but it's not a priority. It doesn't go deep into classes. You just learn very little basic stuff like numbers and morning, afternoon, those sort of things.
Hi, so goodbye.
Nothing that can actually hold you on living somewhere else. And I'm from a part of Brazil, very south, where is a whole state colonized by German people.
Right.
So we do learn German in school before we learn English.
Wow. So you're like trilingual then?
Oh no, it's been like over 10 years that I don't practice my German, so it's terrible. But I do remember some like numbers. But yeah, so we learned Portuguese, of course, and then because of all the buildings and everything that you ask, every restaurant menu, it has a translation to German, and most food and mains and stuff have German names and some streets and all that. You're already introduced to German before any other language, then comes English. So it's more like you pick up a little, but not that hard.
And so when you came here and you didn't know any English, or you knew a little bit, like the numbers and hello.
Yeah, like, hi, nice to meet you.
Yeah.
But my accent was really bad too. So.
And what did you do to learn more? Did you go to school, have to speak English at school, or did you speak English, you know, go hang out with English speaking friends? Like, what kind of things did you do?
Because when I came here, I had a tourist visit. It came after my mom. My mother came here for work many years ago with a Brazilian friend of hers that lives here for also many, many years. They started being business partners. Then she came to visit this girl, met what now is my stepdad. He's my mom's partner. He went to Brazil and they've been in a relationship for quite a while. And then she decided to move here and I came after her. So I had a tourist visa. I couldn't afford really to pay for a school or anything. We're waiting for our resident visa to be officially allowed to live in New Zealand.
How old were you when you moved here?
18. I had just turned 18.
Okay, so you were out of school.
Yes, yeah.
Right.
Had done a whole year of uni. So that's why I waited a bit to come, because I wanted to finish at least my first year. Because I didn't know if it was going to work out here or not. I had really good faith that it would, but not 100% sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I'm going to finish the first year. So if something goes wrong, I can always go back to it. So yeah, I came here, couldn't really afford English school or anything like that. So I just started to hanging out with people here that speak English and Portuguese and English, so they could help me out. Remember that first time I went out clubbing and I wanted to get a glass of water, and you learn American English in school in Brazil. I got to the counter and I was like, can I have some water? And the girl just keeps looking at me, staring at me like, what do you want? Water. Okay, I gave up. And then I just left to my friend like, can you give me water, please? So it really was hard in the beginning, but it's something that with practice, and it just goes with it. And I really wanted to, because I had a really strong feeling that this was my home now, and I always felt like it was my home, and I would just learn it the hard way, but learn it.
And so you were speaking English with Portuguese-speaking friends. Did you have, like, many Kiwi friends, or was it mainly, like, your Portuguese-speaking friends that you spoke English with?
I didn't have many Kiwi friends in the beginning. I made some, but then we lost contact through the years, also because my English was really poor, so I didn't expect anyone to be like inviting me out to a place or to a party or whatever that no one would speak Portuguese, because then I would feel completely lost.
Yeah.
So I just like had some people that I had contact with, but most likely just my Brazilian friends that speak English and would like help me out and hang out with me and introduce me to the whole thing.
When you arrived here, did you come to Auckland, or where'd you sort of start?
My mother lives with her partner in Omokoroa. It's a little tiny beach place about 30 minutes from Tauranga. Central? Yeah, so 20 to 30 minutes from Tauranga Central. So yeah, I was basically living in Tauranga in Yamaganui. That's where I was until 2018. And then I came to Auckland.
Yeah, right. Would you say that you kind of slotted into the Brazilian cultural life in New Zealand because of your family and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so.
The reason I ask that is because I have found now these days, like arriving here in New Zealand, I find that culturally, like I haven't really met too many other Aussies and, you know, how like stick together with your own culture or like people where you're from and stuff. But I found it a bit of a challenge to randomly find Kiwis, you know, Kiwis that want to get to know you and make friends with them and sort of integrate into that like Kiwi cultural part of life. I'm associating more with foreigners and there's nothing wrong with that. I wonder if your experience was quite similar, like it was just harder to meet Kiwis.
I think because in Auckland you see so many people around that are not from here.
Mm-hmm.
You meet so many people, most likely everyone you're going to meet out in a party or at a cafe or anywhere, they came from somewhere else.
Yeah.
You're going to find some Kiwis every now and then, but especially Auckland, you see so many international people. In Tauranga, it's not that much. There's more Kiwis than international people, I would say. The proportion is a lot different. So I would go out and I would leave and have a daily relationship with more Kiwis, even than Brazilians.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that because of like a job that you had or how was that?
I didn't have a job at the time. I couldn't work on my tourist visa, so I did like babysitting for about a year and a half. But just on the daily going out to do stuff, you leave there a lot more. Like there isn't so many other international culture getting into. Still pretty Kiwi.
Working bar jobs and service attendants at Pack and Save and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Talking about, you know, your faith and that it will kind of happen, is that something that you draw from? Like, it seems that you're very strong in your mind. Like, you know, you were saying that you had a belief or a faith that you were going to move here and that it was going to be a done thing. And then it was also like you had this real belief that you're in New Zealand and you're going to learn the language. Like, would you say like that's a motivator for you?
Yeah, it's really weird in a good way, because I have a photo of mine taken when I was 4 years old.
Of what, sorry?
A photo of mine.
Of yours, okay.
Yeah, it was taken when I was 4 years old and I am with a little pink suitcase in there moving to Australia.
Wow.
Can show you that later. Yeah, so my mom said that I was always crazy about it. No clue where in the map that was. But yeah, always had a dream about it, always loved it, loved this part of the ocean. And when I was about 16, 17, my mom started doing this business with this girl here. And she's like, oh, she's from New Zealand. We got this email with this girl wanting to do business with my mom's company. And she's like, she's from New Zealand. And I'm like, where is that? By the name, I think it is like near Iceland or something. And found out it is a few hours away from Australia. So I was like, oh, you kidding me? And then my mom came here the first time and I was crazy to come with her. I was like, please, 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 please. And she's like, nah, don't worry about it. I'll go because it's work. And maybe in the future you can go for me. I don't need to go and you go for the company. I'm like, okay, fine. So she came and things just crazy instantly worked out. They started doing business together. It went out really well. She met Paul. He went to Brazil. They started a very nice friendship and then a relationship. And it just flew. She came here and I was like, I can't believe I'm moving a few hours away from the place I always thought I would be. And then I was like, maybe because I didn't know what that was, but my goal is to be there. Maybe that's even better than what I've ever dreamed of. And as soon as I stepped foot in here, I felt like, it's crazy for those who believe or those not, but I just felt like my soul and spirit were coming back home.
Wow.
I was just like, okay, I'm not leaving. No matter what it takes, how hard it is, if I have to live with no money, if I have to work for free, if I have to do 80 hours a week, I will do it and I'll just work out because this is my place. And my mom wasn't so sure about it. She was 60 at the time.
Right.
So she was like, are you sure you're leaving everything there? All your friends, your childhood friends, everyone, your family, everyone. And I'm like, nah, I feel like it's here. And it is. So the first time my mom went back to Brazil, She was like, okay, so we have this stuff. We're cleaning the house out because we're going to sell it. Where do you want me to storage it? And I'm like, I'm not going back. You can sell it all.
Oh, wow. Bang.
And she was like, Ahina, think you better. You don't know. We don't have the residency yet. They can't say no to us. And I'm like, no, they won't. They have no reason to say no. They won't say no. You can sell it all. My bed, my wardrobe, my clothes that I had left, every single thing. Nowadays, I don't know if I would do it. I'm like, oh my God, it took me guts that I don't know where from. But I just told her, sell it all, give it to charity. There's more people that need it and I don't need it. I'm here. I can't bring it over. It's just sitting there. There's people that need it. Give it away. And she's like, okay, that's your call. Mm. If you agree later, that's your call. And I'm like, that's fine. I'll suffer the consequences later, but don't worry about it. I'm not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And she came back and it was hard. It was really hard. For a few times, I was like, oh my God, what did I do? Now I have nothing to go back to. But I still had this really strong faith that things would work out and I would stay here. And it did. A few months later, immigration accepted us and we're officially at home.
Wow.
In paper. I always feel like it, but in paper.
Paper's kind of the one you need, right?
Yes, yeah.
Now, in recent events, you have now become a permanent resident and you can live here forever.
Exactly. So after that, I have to be in line and be a very good girl. So they would grant me the permanent residency, which means I don't have any travel expiry dates. I don't have any conditions applied to me. Mm-hmm. But of course, to do like what is in the law, what is allowed and all that stuff. But yeah, I'm a permanent resident now. I'm just on countdown to become a citizen and get my New Zealand passport.
Is that the plan?
Yes, it is.
You spoke about Australia, you know, that being the goal. Is that still the goal or has that now just been like something that, you know, you're happy to sort of put behind you because you have found home?
Yeah, I think Australia was the thing that I threw at the universe being like, that was my goal. That was a place that I always felt attracted to. But I think that worked out to lead me to where I am now, that is New Zealand. And I really feel like home and I wouldn't change living here to live permanently anywhere else.
So you wouldn't move to Australia?
No, I think I still want to go there, maybe spend a while living there because it was always my childhood dream. But I would always come back to New Zealand. So I think it was a good thing that it existed and it was there in the picture for me because it did lead me the way to here. And mm-hmm. I think I attracted that a lot to myself. But now I know that it's not far from me. I'm close to there somehow. I am connected to it somehow. And I can go there in time. I plan to stay there for a while, go and stuff, know it. But I'm happy that it did lead me to New Zealand because I really love it here.
I really love that you had that belief and that you, I guess, were very open and like agile in the way that you kind of had this belief about Australia or that it was going to happen and you've kind of found and made light of the best things for you and recognize it, you know, like going with that gut feeling of like when you come home, i.e. New Zealand, feeling like you're home and just wanting to stick to it. Like, I think that's really cool.
Yeah. It's something that you feel. And I know that most people is like, oh, this is my home now and stuff like that. But I just instantly felt it. I had no plans on going back until I were completely settled here and with a piece of paper saying that I am person from here. Well, I am allowed to come back here. I am living here now. So that was my goal. And that was the thing that I felt from the first, like from day one. It was really crazy how it all went. But
it's crazy how it all worked out in a way.
Exactly. Like how everything perfectly worked out, even though the hard moments, like I see that every single one of them I needed to go through to give me something else and to give me something else, because without it I probably wouldn't even be here today. So I'm really grateful for it all. It really worked out fine.
Yeah, that's good. Where to now? You're an apprentice jeweler or are you a fully fledged jeweler now? Is that something you want to kind of continue on with? Have you got plans to do other stuff?
I have plans on traveling. I do want to travel quite a lot before I settle somewhere, like, you know, buy a house, settle. On my career, I definitely want to stick with jewelry and the business because I've just recently graduated in business and marketing. So I am going to use that for my own business. And right now I work in a business that is a gold buying business. So I am definitely, like, it's a very nice job. I love it. I have a very good relationship with my boss. Like, it's a very good partnership that works for us. And he trusts me with the company and I enjoy running it and definitely want to stick with it until it works by itself and I can just manage it from wherever I decide to settle.
So this gold buying business, is that what you're talking about?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, right. So have you started this business or is this a business that you've kind of come into?
That's the business that I walked into when I came to Auckland.
Right.
It just started to work out. That's what brought me into the jewelry market and the jewelry business, jewelry making, designing. So that's what I want to do. I want to do my own designs and sell it to this business that I'm also running now together with my boss. And once that's happening, then that's the time that I can just sit back, relax, and do my thing, live off my creativity and my ideas and my projects.
What are some of those projects? Like, what does being a success mean to you? Like, what needs to happen for you to say that you're successful?
More than just the material stuff, like money and cars and houses and all that.
Sound it out for me. Tell me how much money you want to make and how many houses you want or cars or whatnot. Like, tell
I definitely want to have heaps of it. I'm really extra. I'm a very extra. I do want my business to be making me a few thousands a month.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Right. When I get into like doing my fine jewelry with good diamonds, good gold. But success for me is when I'm in business, it's ready to make money to hold itself up and run it and be successful in the business, not just in the financial side, but be known as good stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Want some famous people to wear my jewelry.
Nice. Nice.
It will.
Yeah. I think, you know, your belief is quite strong and I think you have that power of attraction down, you know, you believe that you were going to move to somewhere close, you know, in the antipodes, believe that you are going to live here and here you are. Yes. Like, it's so true.
Exactly. So I do believe in the power of attraction. So I try to mentalize it and picture it as much as I can, how I want it, exactly how I want it.
Mm.
And of course, working really hard for it.
And has there been times when you've just kind of, I don't know, but like found it really hard to deal with maybe like your English or getting set up here? Like, have you had any sort of really difficult times whilst in the, I guess, the 4 years you've been here trying to find yourself where you are now?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. All those hard times, they weren't just tiny hard times. They were really hard times where my mother had to constantly go back to Brazil because of her business that we're still running.
What's her business?
She's an event designer in accessories and stuff like that. So yeah, creativity runs in the family. She had to constantly go back and I was here by myself. And the place that she was living were like a little tiny house. The first neighbor is over a kilometer away. Wow. Middle of nowhere. Paradise place, but middle of nowhere for an 18-year-old girl that just came here with no English.
Mm.
So I moved to the Mount to live with a friend. I was financially really unstable because all I had were like babysitting, dishwashing, everything that picked up, every small job, every cash in hand job, everything that I could do, I did. But sometimes it wasn't enough. And sometimes I had to swap meals of the day because I could just use one and had to move. Like, I lived in 11 houses in a period of 18 months.
Wow.
I had to constantly be moving because of I can't afford that much rent. I cannot pay rent this month. I cannot do this. That's too far from where my house that I'm doing babysitting at is. Constantly moving, really unstable, but just on the waiting and working hard. So it was really hard. And my English was really poor. So a few jobs refused me because I couldn't understand what they were saying or what they were doing or what to do.
Would you say that was the hardest thing about getting some stability, like your lack of English and trying to find a good job?
Yep, that and the non-ability of work. I weren't allowed to officially work with a tourist visa. That's illegal.
Yeah.
So I had to literally just wait. And waiting is really can be really painful.
Yeah, patience is a mother, right?
It is. And it's not just waiting, enjoying and touristing and having a holiday. It's like waiting. But I didn't come here on a holiday. I came here moving here. I didn't come to visit first. I was literally moving here. And I just moved into a place that I didn't speak the language. I didn't know the habits. It was a total, like, when it's day here, it's nighttime where I used to be. And not much friends, no family, and yeah, had to just wait on it. So it was really, really a bit painful, but it was worth it all, definitely.
How did you deal with the waiting? Like, did you busy yourself in other ways or?
There was not much I could do. So I just tried to, like, I was constantly going for looking for jobs, like casual stuff, helping people out, spending the days at my friends, like helping, like doing some stuff with my friends that were free and time consuming. Yeah, I got really stressed. I've put like about 10 kgs on in a period of 3 or 4 months. Got really, really stuck on that. But I believe it was part of it. And I was like, well, it was also I could value it more when I had what I wanted. I'm really proud of going through it all, but really happy that it worked out. And I probably wouldn't be here today if I haven't gone through all those things.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And how did you get into making jewelry?
As soon as I moved to Auckland, my friend used to work in a mall that had this gold buying business shop. He was friends with my boss, and my boss just came to him like, I need someone to help me with the shop, literally flyering. And he's like, I know the perfect person for you. Call me. I am at Kmart buying stuff for my house here because I was moving in the next day. And he's like, I have a job interview for you. And I'm like, okay, I'm moving tomorrow. So maybe the day after. He's like, no, right now. Pass me the phone to my boss. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. Hi. He talks to me and I'm like, yeah, sure. I'm moving in tomorrow. I can even talk to you tomorrow if you want. And my boss, he's a really nice person. He's like, no. Tomorrow you probably want to settle in, give it a few days, meet me in the end of the week. And we can talk about it. I can get to know you and explain to you what the job is and the situation. So I came here. I had a meeting with him. I was like, okay, no, that's fine. I just need a job. I just moved here. I just need a job. So I started as that part-time. Really low cash, but I was like, oh, it's a job, like, until I find something else. It started part-time, it became full-time. My boss started to see me that I enjoy the business. I like that sort of market, the jewelry and the gold business. Started indicating me to some courses, some lessons. It started teaching me a lot of stuff that honestly, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't know until now. And it would take me at least 10 years to know everything that he's told me. He's been in this business for over 20 years now. And he just slowly saw a future in the business for me. And I brought it. I was like, nah, I'm in. I'm all in. I absolutely love it. And that's where I see myself.
As in making jewelry in the future as well as the gold buying business or...
Yeah, I think so. I think that the gold buying business could be a side business for me together with my own designs.
And what do you think about this whole like side business, side hustle culture? Like it seems like you've come from a place where you have had to hustle to make money. And now you're at a place where you've got like a bit of stability, but you've still got the side hustle. Like are you juggling
Yeah,
it?
I think because I just... Exactly because of where I came from and because I'm so used to if this doesn't work, I need something else to back me up that I'm always with like two projects going at the same time, two or more things going at the same time because I'm always like if this fails, I need a backup. If this fails, I need a backup. I can't be left empty-handed and with nowhere to go like I was once. So I'm always with like trying to have everything as much under control as possible, which is a bit exhausting, but it avoided me some really big trouble when something fails and I had a backup that was like something that held me on. And I don't know what I would do if I didn't have that backup, but it's really exhausting.
It's definitely that whole ability to switch from one mode to another.
Exactly. Even when I'm choosing what I would do for studying, because I was studying this year until not long ago, a couple of months ago, and because I've done two courses in Auckland since I moved in, and I was like, I'm going to do something that has a really open work area, something that is not too specific so I can work in more than one thing with the same qualification. So I went for what I love, that was creativity. So I decided I'll stick with marketing because I've done that before, publicity marketing. And then I've done business and marketing because that would just like, even though someday I work for anyone else, I can always use that in my favor and it's always a good qualification. People need someone with that.
Yeah, for sure. And how long have you been making jewelry?
making my own just this year, probably about 5 months.
Yeah.
But working with it for 2 years.
And that's how long you've lived in Auckland?
Yeah.
What would you say to the Ahina who had just moved here with mum in, what was the name of that town?
Omokorua.
Knowing what you know now, would you have any words of wisdom for her?
Oh, everything that crossed my mind back then, I'll be like, chill, it's fine. The feeling of you by yourself, you on your own, you're not. Like, you're good. You have some good people around you, some very good people around you. It's all worth it. I always had a feeling, like, even then, I always had a feeling that would be worth it. But just so you can make sure now, it is worth it. It is so worth it. And the whole is going to get worse before it gets better, but it's worth it.
And would you say that is your favorite quote? Like, it's worth it?
Yeah, that and like, nothing is as ours as our own dreams.
Nothing as, say that again?
Nothing is as much ours as our own dreams. So that's the thing that we own the most.
Well, that's almost it from me here on Misadventurous. If you dig what you hear and want to keep up to date with every single episode of the Misadventurous podcast, hit subscribe however you're listening to this right now. And if you want to be even more of a legend and help other wayward adventurers find this path, I'd love it if you head on over to iTunes and rate and review this podcast. Go on, 5 stars for all that positivity, right? So until next time, and don't forget, it's the small choices that we make every single day that build up to that big change that you're working towards. So stay with it.